Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Katie Gilpatrick, adjunct professor of sociology at UNLV and the founder of the Movies That Matter Club at UNLV, as well as VegasArtHouse.com. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start this week with Pride and Glory, which is a sort of fairly rote, I think, cop thriller with Edward Norton and Colin Farrell and corruption and betrayal and family. And really, you know, you could kind of write this one with a connect the dots book, I think.
Yeah, you could. I agree with you there.
It's I like Edward Norton and I'm sort of lukewarm on Colin Farrell depending on the movie, but
I'm a big Colin Farrell fan.
Are you? Okay.
Did you see him in Bruges?
I did see. I didn't really like In Bruges, actually.
Oh, okay.
I know a lot of people really did, but I felt like In Bruges was trying a little too hard, and I don't know. He always comes off to me, Colin Farrell, like he's sort of like confused as to what he's doing. He always has this sort of befuddled look on his face,
right? A little crazy. I thought the craziness was good, but he only got one scene in this movie where he had those flashing eyes of craziness.
Right.
And the rest of it was just, you know, one F word after the next. It was like when they forgot about, you know, what they were going to put in the dialogue, they just said, oh, just add another F word. That'll, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do like F words, but you're right. And I like that the scene where the Colin Farrell character, who he's the sort of corrupt cop,
right,
and Edward Norton is his brother-in-law who's trying to root out the corruption or the conspiracy going on in the department. And Colin Farrell is sort of menacing this little baby with an iron.
Oh, I know.
And,
I like that.
And I did, well, because it was just.
Okay, as a mom.
Well, right. I mean, it's. I didn't say I liked it because I wanted to see the baby
It was tense.
Right. It was tense. And it was the kind of thing that I would have liked to see from the movie where you're really, you know, you're on edge and you're thinking like,
yeah,
this guy could really do something. He could, you know, kill the baby with the iron or burn it or whatever.
Right. And you actually didn't know if he was going to push that envelope. Or were they going to, like, actually go there in the movie? And you thought, no, nobody would do that.
Right.
And
right.
You heard women in the audience going, no, not the baby, not the baby.
Right. And it's, I mean, I guess it's a little cheap when you put babies in danger. But on the other hand, I did feel like that was the one time during the movie where I thought, you know, this is sort of exciting. And the rest of
right.
the time, it was very dull.
It broke tradition right there. Yes.
Yeah.
It really pushed the envelope. But then they had to, like, make up for it at the end where he went and said, are we blowing – does it matter if we, like, blow the plot
there well, you know,
a little bit?
Spoiler alert for anyone who cares.
Spoiler alert. So he goes up and he says, oh, you know, what a beautiful baby. And that was just completely contradictory to what had just happened,
right.
It negated the whole tension of that scene, I thought. But
yeah,
that's just
yeah.
me.
Well, I mean, I do think the movie sort of pulls its punches in a certain sense, that it's not willing to commit to being sort of ridiculously over-the-top violent, although there are parts
right.
that are pretty violent.
Right. Gratuitously so.
Right. Yeah. No, that is true, where he's beating people up and you see.
Right.
But at the same time, I didn't really buy into the seriousness of it either.
Exactly. Remember the scene where the family was all like arguing and the mother comes down, stop arguing. And then all of a sudden it came to some kind of resolution. Everybody just stopped yelling and said, okay, and walked out the door. And I thought that was like, okay, well, they just ran out of things to say.
They're trying to build the sort of the idea of the family tension. You know, there's
right.
also Edward Norton's brother, played by Noah Emmerich, who's the commander of the unit. With
he was
all
pretty
the,
good.
He was good. He good, was good.
Good.
And he's a, you know, he's a sort of dependable character actor, I think. And he does do a good job. But all that sort of family dynamic, and his character has a wife who's dying of cancer, and there's a lot of sort of melodrama with that. And
right.
I don't know.
That never gets resolved or even explained. And they try to keep suspension through showing the scar on Edward Norton's face or his character Ray, you know, and mm-hmm. then finally giving you some kind of hint to what that is at the end, and never really clearly explaining that until the very ending scene, and then it had lost all its power, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think there it's it doesn't have the weight that you would hope for from a story like this.
Yes, there wasn't that character development, and you never fell in love with any character too much. And so the antagonist and protagonist in there, it wasn't that clear, did you think?
No, well, I mean, obviously.
You knew the two stars had to be antagonist, protagonist, and you're like wondering how when that was going to come about. But Edward Norton's character, I thought Ray, was pretty weak.
He was, yeah. And again, I like Edward Norton. And
so
I feel
do I,
like
yeah.
He's done good work here. But yeah, it was hard to care about his sort of moral crisis or whatever he's undergoing.
Right. It was, yeah. You just couldn't. You were just like, everybody just needs to talk and figure this out.
Right. If they just had sat down at the kitchen table.
Exactly.
We could have skipped the whole movie.
Exactly.
It would have all been over. So, yeah, which would have been nice. And, I mean, it's a shame because again, there are good actors here. And,
there was
good,
potential.
There was potential. But it just does seem like sort of a waste. So I gave this movie 2 stars out of 5 in my review in the weekly. I don't know if you want to give it a star rating. If you have a.
Oh, I don't do stars.
Okay.
How about thumbs?
You do the thumbs. You want to
give it
want?
Like a half a thumbs down.
Half a thumbs down. All right. So a disappointment. So moving on to a completely different kind of movie. Opening over at Village Square this week is the documentary Flow, For Love of Water, which is a sort of advocacy documentary, I guess
yes.
you would say, which is, I know, something that you're organization at UNLV specializes in showcasing.
Right, that's what we do at Movies That Matter. We show documentaries that are consciousness raising, social issues, and try to get a lot of students involved and hopefully make at least some kind of difference.
Right,
or at least bring put the light bulb on. Yeah.
Right, right, and that's definitely I think what this movie is trying to do as well.
I think so too,
with the issue
exactly.
of. Water scarcity and water contamination and just a lot of things related to issues of how people consume and
right. It was broad. It was a broad topic.
It was very
and
broad,
and it showed all these separate elements, but then brought them all together under one big subject matter, and it did everything that a documentary should. It brought was consciousness awareness. And it was interesting and clearly put together and totally informative. And, it makes you think and wants you and gets you to that point where you want to contribute or do something or make some kind of difference. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I wish I could say, like, I always hate watching movies like about these things because it is an important issue.
Yes.
And obviously people should be aware of these things. But at the same time, I sort of wonder, I felt like it was so broad at times. I mean, it's all sort of centered around this one idea of water, but there are so many sort of different issues
aspects
related
to it,
and
yes.
aspects, exactly. There's the scarcity issue, and there's the whole issue of the corporations dealing with bottled water, and there's the contamination of the tap water. And I was frustrated at times because it was sort of contradictory. I mean, she has a whole long segment in the movie about how bottled water is sort of a scam, and we shouldn't be bothering to buy bottled water because it's not really, any better than our tap water. But then the movie has started out with a whole segment about how your tap water is contaminated.
Bad, yes.
So, I mean, I felt like at times she sort of lost sight of what the point was or what she's saying. You know, I get frustrated with these movies that sometimes are like, all this stuff is bad and we don't really know what to do about it. And there were some organizations sort of towards the end of the movie, I feel like they were showcasing where they're trying to come up with solutions for these problems.
Exactly, yeah.
And I like that. And I mean, again, I think, the organizations that she showcases here are admirable and it's an important issue. But especially at the end where it's sort of at the credits, they just sort of lose the pretense of even having a movie. And they just say, look, go to our website and sign
right.
up, which is good. But I wonder when I watch movies like this, like, do you want to go to a theater and pay $10 to see this?
Well, personally, I would. But
okay.
then I'm a sociologist and that's, and these are kind of things are causes. To me, I think these type of documentaries are analogous to the journalistic muckrakers of the past.
Right.
Because media and the visual is how we kind of, things come to our collective conscious now. instead of people just everybody sitting around the radio or reading newspapers like they used to. So this is a way to reach out. And then, of course, people that do go see these kind of things, you're already preaching to the choir because
right.
you're trying to tap into an environmentalist mindset, probably. And so what it does is it gives, I think, all of her message is umbrellaed under how this natural resource that was once just something free that came to us, you know, from the air and from the oceans and the whole, you know, ecosystem are now turning into something privatized. And through that whole venture, it, you know, it makes our tap water bad. It, you know, it builds dams that change the landscape and then change the whole environment and where these dams are built. How people that used to be able to just go down to the stream and get their water now. It's all polluted and, you know, and underprivileged people then have to pay for something that used to be free. So I think she is umbrelling the whole thing under this.
Right.
Something that was once free to us is now another commodification right behind the, and she says, you know, this is the third largest industry right behind oil and energy. So,
right.
And then you start thinking, well, what's next then? Maybe air. So I think that was her larger message, and you're right. It is disparate. It does have these different aspects to it, but
yeah.
at the same time, it gives you that choice to pick your passion.
Right.
You know, do you want to go help some people build a water well in some African village where they don't have drinkable water, or do you want to get a petition up to make this a declaration that everybody should have this free and natural resource? Or should you stop drinking bottled water? Or should you put a reverse osmosis into your house and clear up your tap water? Whatever, you know, it gives you kind of those options. It tells you about these many problems.
Right. And all that stuff, I mean, I don't want to imply that, like, I disagree necessarily with her broader point or that those are bad things. I just think sometimes movies like this tend to lose sight of, like, being a movie. And I suppose at some point you have to sort of – it's sort of hard to define, like, what's a movie, which is why I'm saying I don't know what I would recommend going to see this movie in a theater and paying $10. But if it were showing, say, at UNLV, or if it shows
yes.
on television, or you could maybe rent it from Netflix or something, you could learn something from it, certainly.
True.
It's
not really entertainment value.
No, it's yeah. not. It's not. And not that every movie has to be entertaining. I mean, at least it does. It held my interest, I would say, for the most part. But again, you know, it doesn't need to be seen on a big screen. And I think that does self-select the kind of people that go see it. No one is going to pay $10 to see this movie
right.
unless they already pretty much agree with what it has to say.
Yeah,
and
these things should actually be free anyway.
They should, right. Yeah. No, they really, you're not wrong about that. And there are websites now, I think a lot. Snag Films is one that's big on showing a lot of these sort of political or social activism documentaries where you can see them for free. Because really, your $10 would be better spent rather than giving it to the theater and the distributor. Give it directly to one of these organizations
right.
that helps people.
Right. I totally agree with that. And it is more like, a film festival type of
right.
of movie. So, I, you know, only certain documentaries have that entertainment value.
Yeah.
And this one's just very didactic.
It's
there to, you know, serve, the lesson.
Yeah.
So,
right. Yeah. It's a good classroom kind of movie.
Yeah.
So.
I will probably be adding it to our selection of movies that matter.
Right. And it would be good for that, I
right.
think. Especially because you're able to get students who might not necessarily always come in with the same point of view as the movie. And, you know, those are the people, I think, who could potentially get the most out of
exactly.
it if they are not aware of these things.
And they're big bottled water drinkers as well, I might add.
Right. They all bring their bottled water to the
yeah.
to the screening. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I almost feel bad whenever I criticize movies like this. But at the same time, I can't recommend seeing it. I gave it 2.5 stars, which is sort of right in the middle. It's not a bad movie, per se. I assume you give it a thumb up.
Yeah, I'm giving it a big thumb up.
All right.
You know, for its genre.
Yeah.
within its genre, and I thought it was fabulous.
Right. No, that's fair. So, and then, okay, we can switch gears entirely yet again, and I will briefly discuss what's probably going to be the biggest movie of the weekend, which is High School Musical 3, Senior Year, which luckily you were not subjected to.
but I'll hear about it from some kids, actually.
Are the college students into the High School Musical? I feel like the audience is a little younger.
No, but I think they have younger brothers and sisters, and I have some friends that her kids are just in love with High School Musical, so.
Yeah, it's there were definitely tons of kids. I went to see it last night. And the kids were screaming as soon as Zac Efron appears on the screen.
Yeah.
Huge applause from the audience. And, you know, I've seen all three High School Musicals, and I have a certain fascination with tween culture and this sort of Disney. It used to be a sort of subculture. Now it's fairly dominant with Miley Cyrus and the Jonas Brothers and people like that. And it's so wholesome. And it's so squeaky clean, and it's so the opposite of, like, what we think of as sort of, like, the depravity of youth culture, right, or, like, brats or something like that being marketed to young girls. And so, in a way, like Flo, I have to give it credit for having a nice positive social message about, you know, being true to yourself and not giving into peer pressure and things like that. And I like that it embraces the sort of tradition of movie musicals, which are not made very often anymore. And this is the first installment that's been on the big screen. The first two were just made for TV Disney movies. But at the same time, it's so horribly bland. The acting is generally pretty wooden. The songs are completely forgettable, sort of pop songs, nothing that compares to sort of old show tunes. And the direction is very flat. There are a couple numbers here where they use the bigger budget to do a sort of homage to older musicals and the styles and the costumes, which I liked. But for the most part, I think as a movie musical, this really doesn't measure up. But obviously the little girls and, you know, people who are huge fans of it will go see it anyway. And I certainly would not want to begrudge some, you know, 9-year-old her fun in watching Zac Efron or whatever.
And it'll probably make, you know, it'll probably just bust the charts on, you know, millions and millions of dollars that it rakes in as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if something has to be a huge sensation, better this than, like, I don't know. Well, Saw, for example, which is also Saw 5 opening this week, which they didn't screen for critics, so we're not able to discuss. But I think like Flo, I gave about 2.5 stars. It's sort of, if you're not inclined to like it, you won't like it, but for what it is, you know, it kind of works for its audience. That's about the best I can say about it. So, and then coming up on DVD this coming Tuesday is Journey to the Center of the Earth, which was in 3D in theaters, and I saw it in 3D, but I don't know. Well, you didn't miss much.
Oh, didn't I? Oh.
And, well, the thing is, I don't think it's going to be in 3D on DVD, or if it is, it's in a sort of lower tech version with just like the red and blue plastic glasses that they used to have like in the 50s.
Yeah.
And this is a movie that really doesn't exist for any reason other than to be in 3D. It has a lot of special effects and things popping out of the screen at you. And story-wise, it's pretty flimsy. Brendan Fraser is a scientist who, you know, journeys to the center of the earth. And they find dinosaurs and monsters and lava and whatnot there. It's pretty silly and inconsequential. And it's sort of fun to watch if you're just looking for the 3D special effects. But I think at home, on a smaller screen, with no 3D, it's just boring.
Some things are just meant for the big screen.
Right. Yeah. It really is. And I think it's almost like a theme park ride. You know, they should install this movie at like Disneyland and just run it constantly, like Captain EO. And I think people might enjoy themselves. But I'm not really sure what you would get out of watching it on video.
Are they going to show it over at IMAX ever?
I'm not sure if it was shown in IMAX, but it was definitely shown in. It might have been in IMAX 3D as well. But the thing with IMAX theaters now is that so many movies, like new movies, are made in IMAX. They no longer have the sort of standing ones.
Yeah.
And the IMAX at the Luxor is closed, which is where they used to show a lot of the sort of more educational IMAX, you know, Journey Under the Sea and the Space Adventures and stuff. So it's sort of too bad because I think this movie might be kind of fun for little kids if you took them to a theater, but I don't know why they would want to watch it at home.
No, just to put on those glasses, maybe.
Right, maybe just to put on the glasses. If it comes with, I'm not sure, you know, I should have checked this before we started, but I think it might come with the sort of lower tech glasses, and maybe that's enough fun for kids. I don't know. Kids are easily amused.
Yeah.
Get them High School Musical instead. And then I want to recommend something that actually I like on DVD, which is the TV series, The 4400, and there's a set of the whole series, which was four seasons, and it was just unfortunately canceled. So it sort of ends on a cliffhanger, but it was a good, sometimes hokey, but generally involving entertaining sci-fi series on USA about 4,400 people who were abducted and then suddenly mysteriously reappeared with magic powers and what's going on. And yeah, it's a little ridiculous, but it had some cool twists and some fun superpowered stuff. And, you know, it's sort of old fashioned Saturday morning serial kind of thing. And I think it's worth checking out. It has a sort of cult following, I think, when it was on, and not enough to keep it going, but worth checking out on DVD. So I would recommend that, and maybe go see Flow, or maybe wait on DVD for Flow.
Or come to UNLV in a few months, and we'll have it showing.
Exactly. check out Movies That Matter at UNLV, and check out VegasArtHouse.com as well. Katie Gilpatrick, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
For Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell, and tune in next week.
Josh Bell hates everything
except me.